You're listening to The Jerry Agar Show on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Time for our science segment here with Dr. Dan Riskin. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. So, does forensic handwriting comparison really work? I mean, it seems to work pretty well in the movies and on television.
That's just it. And lie detectors work well in TV, but those are total, those are a farce. So I thought for sure this business of like having some expert come in and look at two handwriting samples and say, yes, that was written by the same person. It seems a little airy-fairy to me. I didn't think that was going to work. So I was happy to see that this was tested rigorously. They had 180 comparisons, some of which were from the same person, some of which were from different people. And they gave it to a whole bunch of different experts. And these are people who've been trained for many years working on this, who are called on for court cases. And surprisingly to me, they know what they're doing. They did quite well. And so when they said it was two different people, they were only wrong about 1% of the time. So 99% correct rate is very good. I mean, if that's excellent for a human being making a judgment call. And then on the other side, if you have two people that are the same, the false error rate on that side was about 2.5%. Actually, it's interesting because in this study, they had 10 of the samples were from twins who wrote the same thing, or who both wrote, and then the twin samples were paired, and they asked the expert, are these from the same person? And the error rate is a little higher there. People are a little bit fooled by twins because their handwriting can be so similar. But so that got it up to about 9% error rate instead of the normal 2.5% error rate. So I was surprised, but it turns out these experts know what they're doing.
Well, and there was no difference between cursive and printing.
Yeah, isn't that cool? So, I'm not an expert, clearly, so don't count on me for your court case unless you really want to get away with something. But I think they look at the how hard the pen is pressed and the angle at which it's held, as much as they can tell that. But if they've got two cursive samples or two printed samples, they can tell whether it comes from the same person or not with the same efficacy.
You know, I saw one of those antique roadshow type things or whatever. Maybe it was the Pawn Star thing. And a lady brought in a guitar and it had been signed by all four members of the Beatles. So that's pretty cool. So they called in a handwriting expert. And the handwriting expert brought verified signatures of each of the Beatles. And especially on the Ringo one, even I could see it wasn't the same signature. And, and they said, I'm sorry. And the lady went, that's all right. I'll just take it back home and hang it on the wall. My friends don't know.
Well, there you go. That's true. And beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And sometimes a good story is worth more. And I just can't help but think that writing on a guitar might give you a different effective handwriting than writing on a piece of paper. It'd be hard to get you're holding a Sharpie instead of a pen. Maybe it was the Beatles. I want to believe. Sometimes that really, this is why I shouldn't be the handwriting expert. Sometimes I'm cheering for a certain answer.
Yeah. Well, this could be very important, though, in some court cases. I mean, I have a friend who was ripped off at one point in a situation where somebody faked his signature onto a contract. And but here's what he did. He's left-handed. So he changed his signature. He writes it backwards in mirror image. You have to hold it up to read it in a mirror. And that's his official signature. It's on his driver's license.
Wait, did he change it after he had this
yes.
problem happen?
Yes, yes.
So now he can't be duped. Nobody can dupe him.
Well, that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, that's what Da Vinci did that, right? He did that thing where it was all written backwards and you needed a mirror to see it. I have two different signatures. I have one signature I use for banking and real things. And then I have one signature I use if I wrote a book and sometimes I sign the book for people. I have a different signature there because in my paranoid way, I was like, what if somebody takes my book with my signature in it and then uses that to try to get my money out of the bank? So I've got two different signatures. That's my insurance against that.
Oh, here's one more thing with my friend. Another thing that he did is he collected autographs, and he would write to famous people and ask them for one. And a lot of times he'd get one, an autographed photo or something. And he wrote to Hank Ketchum, the guy who did the Dennis the Menace cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
But Hank Ketchum was so taken by my friend's signature, being mirror image and backward, that Hank Ketchum actually sat down and did a cartoon of Dennis the Menace writing his own name backward in mirror image on a chalkboard.
Whoa, you can't forge that. That's awesome. That's that's amazing. And you know, I had an autograph book when I was a kid, and I remember taking it around and like hoping I would run into one of the Edmonton Oilers, because you know, I was a kid in Edmonton in the 80s, and that was about as big a celebrity as you could ever get. I never got an actual player, but I did get Peter Pocklington's signature, which I think might be worth something on the internet now. But you don't do that anymore. Now if you see a celebrity, you get a selfie with them. You don't ever get an autograph, which I think is interesting. Maybe people still do autographs in some settings, but I think now it's become sort of a selfie world, and we've sort of lost that autograph thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but the picture is a little more compelling because there you are.
It sure
you
is. Know. It sure is. You put it up on your wall and people know instantly that you stood next to Hank Ketchum or whoever it is.
That's right. You spent 3.5 seconds with so-and-so.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about another thing here. Have you ever been below a full solar eclipse?
I have never, and I'm really looking forward to 2024 because there's going to be a full solar eclipse in April of 2024, right around the GTA. Toronto itself won't be in the shadow, but Hamilton will, and Prince Edward County will, and Niagara-on-the-Lake will. So okay. There's a new paper out about how compelling an experience that is, and I definitely want to do it.
Yeah, well, this paper says eclipses are transforming experiences that make us better people.
Yeah, this is a neat one. This is a really, really neat one. So what they did is they took the total eclipse that went across the United States in 2017. It was August 21, 2017. So almost exactly this date a few years back, 5 years ago. And basically, you compare the tweets that were sent of people who were in the shadow versus people who were not in the shadow. So for a lot of people in the United States, it was a partial eclipse. But for a lot of people, the whole sky went dark and you could see stars for a minute. And then this, you know, and then the moon stopped eating the sun and the sun came back out and all that stuff. And you look at their Twitter feeds, and not surprisingly, you get a lot of words that sort of describe awe that happen more frequently in the path of the shadow where it was a full eclipse. You get words like awe and sublime and transcendent. Those words are more common in the tweets that happened in the full solar eclipse than people who had partial solar eclipses. Fine. But if you look over the course of the day, you start to see other differences as well. People who experienced an eclipse earlier in the day used less self-focused and more pro-social and affiliative and humble and collective language. So they talked about themselves as less important, and they talked about the community and being part of something and what that meant to them. And this is something, the way they do the analysis is they come up with the words ahead of time, and then they look for the preponderance of words in different Twitter feeds. And what they found is a significant difference. So the people who experienced a full eclipse where the whole sky went dark, it did something to them on an emotional level. And I think this is neat because you expect that from cave people who saw an eclipse and didn't see it coming, and all of a sudden the sky went dark. You expect them to think something big happened. But, you know, we live in this science and tech age. Everybody understands why eclipses happen. We all know that we live on a ball that's floating through space. We get it. Well, most of us agree that it's actually a sphere. Some people think it's flat, but let's leave that. But it still fills us with awe. It's still an emotional experience, and it actually changes how humble we are, which I think is really compelling and really interesting.
It doesn't just get dark. What happens is the nighttime insects come out. The little animals start acting like it's nighttime. And I don't know if they go, what the, you know, when the sun comes back out in only a few moments. And I know this, Dan, because I was one of the people right under the very best place to be, that 2017 eclipse. I was on a vacation. Oh, wow. I was on a vacation with a friend, and it just happened that we were going to be in that area. We didn't make the trip for that reason. And we were sitting at our friend's house, and my friend Lorena, the night before, was on the computer and trying to figure out where are we going to go. And all of a sudden, she calls out to her husband, and she goes, look at this. The best place in the world to be right now is our deck. I mean, that's how it worked out. So we ordered in the food and the drinks, and we just sat there on the deck with our glasses. Right. And then when it was over, we didn't have to trek through 10,000 people in order to get home.
Right. There were all these fields where people met. And I mean, in a lot of places, it was cloudy. Did you actually have a clear sky so you could actually see what was happening?
Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody says. And there are a couple of things that I haven't done yet. One is the experiencing a full solar eclipse. The other one is seeing a rocket launch. Those are two things that people always talk about how much it moves them, especially the astronauts when they're on the rocket. But it's a very moving experience to see both of those things, and gives you a sense of scale and how small we are. And I just look forward to that. And so April 8th, 2024, book your Airbnb in Prince Edward County now, or Niagara-on-the-Lake, or wherever it is. Because the thing that kills me is that you look at the maps, and you could see the shadow of the total eclipse go right across Lake Ontario. And I mean, like, honestly, if you had a dinghy and you went out from the spit and, you know, went out into the middle of Lake Ontario, you'd probably get it. But Toronto definitely is not in the full eclipse place.
Okay.
And so I can just imagine all these people are going to be trying to get to the suburbs and trying to get around to where it happens.
Book your Airbnb before they figure out why you're booking that date.
Yeah.
Dan, always good to have you. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Take care.
This is the iHeartRadio Talk Network.